Hey friends, it's Kristen. We're working on a new podcast episode where we answer your questions, and we want to hear from you. What are your toughest or most urgent classroom issues? If you're wrestling with something in class, we want to hear about it, and maybe we can help. There are two ways to share your questions with us. One, call our hotline and leave us a voicemail. Our number is 866-333-4930. I'll say it again, 866-333-4930. You can also email us your question as a voice memo. Just look for the voice memo app on your phone. Our email address is podcasts@edutopia.org. Okay, on with the show. Welcome to Edutopia Radio. This is School of Practice, where we share what works inside real classrooms. I'm Kristen Leong, an editor at Edutopia, and I'm also a former middle school teacher. Today, we are talking about a powerful tool for learning. Here's a hint. According to researchers, on tests of recall, this tactic outperforms writing notes, viewing images, and listening to lectures. Give up? Here's Edutopia's research editor, Yuki Terada, with the big reveal.
The act of drawing something really forces students to grapple with the information, to think about it more deeply, to really ask themselves, do I actually understand this, or am I just regurgitating what someone said to me?
Yuki is talking about a specific series of studies on drawing done by researchers at the University of Waterloo in Canada. In one experiment, undergrads were asked to take notes in a science class using two different methods, writing words like spore or isotope by hand, or illustrating them.
When they wrote those words down, they recalled about 20% of those words afterwards, but when they drew those, they recalled 45% of those words. When you draw something, you encode it multiple ways, visual information of what you draw, but also the kinesthetic information when you're drawing by hand, and also the semantic information where you're thinking about the meaning of the concept. So you're really learning something three different ways, and that creates a more robust memory.
For many teachers, this is not news. It just confirms the benefits of strategies they're already using with students.
They're not going to remember the steps of mitosis, but they will remember drawing a plant growing in the crack of a sidewalk and seeing it change over time.
Salim Talili has taught middle and high school math and science for 20 years in New York City public and private schools. Sketching, as he calls it, is a foundational learning strategy in his classroom, but he says drawing is only part of it.
Drawing isn't about drawing, it's about seeing. If you are paying close attention, you can see things, and if you can see them in their most basic form, then you can build up upon it and expand it and refine it.
Salim is here today to explain how weekly sketching has transformed his high school chemistry and biology classes. He'll tell us why kids should start by drawing an elephant, how he builds attention stamina with his teenage sketchers, and how he grades the quality of student observations without assessing the art. Plus, we'll take a peek at how to use drawing activities in other subjects like math and English and with younger students. Okay, let's get into it. Salim, tell me a little bit about your relationship with drawing. Were you the kid in school that was always sketching your thoughts and questions in the margins?
No way. I really hated drawing. I remember taking my ninth grade art class and telling my mom, I can't wait till this is over. I'll never have to pick up a pencil again. I'm glad I was wrong.
So I know sketching was something you learned when you moved to your current school where art is integrated into the curriculum. But I have to ask, how did you go from I never want to pick up a pencil again to bringing sketching into all of your science classes?
This particular school that I applied to has a very strong artistic focus. I told them, look, I cannot draw a stick figure properly. They laughed and said, it's okay. If you wind up working here, we will teach you how to do more than draw a stick figure. And so part of the requirement was that I had to sit in and take art classes. And on the first art class that I took, I was hooked.
And then what changed for you when you started incorporating sketching into your science classes? How did that new approach enhance learning for your students?
Drawing teaches you to then start paying attention to all of the little nuances of whatever it is that you're looking at. And I'm not like a neuroscientific expert, but if you're looking at something, the image is going into your brain and the optic nerve goes all the way to the back of your brain. So the information is going into your eye and then it's interacting with a lot of your brain. And then there's a long neural pathway between your hand and your brain. So that's two different ways that the information is going into your brain. Then your curiosity, your excitement creates an emotional response, and emotions are a different part of your brain than just that logical part of your brain. All of my teaching for the first 13 years was just trying to cram something into this little sliver of the brain that really doesn't fully develop until we're in our mid-20s, the prefrontal cortex, as opposed to finding ways to hit it from all of these different angles so that it had a chance of sticking longer than the next quiz.
Okay, so drawing improves recall because you're engaging your brain in all these different ways when you're making that memory. Got it. Do you think this close observation skill and these drawing skills are transferable not only across disciplines, but also in the professional world?
Yeah, I can absolutely apply this to any discipline. The more concrete it is, the easier it is. But even in abstract disciplines like math, drawing can be incredibly valuable when you can take an abstract idea and then create a concrete image that your brain can hold on to. Then you can retain it and work with it. Being able to see these details that other people are not noticing is applicable to any discipline, but honestly, it's applicable to life. Learning to sit down, slow down, pay attention, and let your brain discover the beauty, especially the beauty in the mundane, makes life incredibly joyous and exciting.
Salim, that's so lovely. I mean, what I'm really hearing from you is that you are inviting students to slow down and be present and appreciate the wonder of the world. And I'm curious, over your teaching career, have you noticed a shift in students' ability to deeply observe, to be present, and to slow down in that way?
So this is my 20th year, or going into my 20th year of teaching. I've seen three generations of students. It really began to change once everyone had a smartphone. Their attention span drastically changed. I couldn't just teach. I had to show a YouTube video, or I had to have some kind of digital enhancement. But I think I was just making the problem that much worse because it was creating the expectation that my teaching had to be entertainment as well as education. And so I see my job as kind of two things. One, give them as long of a break from the screen as I can. And two, build up the capacity for seeing and capturing details and paying attention to the world around them.
Okay, Salim, how do you get started with drawing in class? Is there a day one activity you really like?
In the beginning, I have them sketch this image of an elephant. Elephant being large, it's easy to draw. Every single time as they share what they're noticing, there is something that they notice that I had never noticed before. They all had these all different aha moments. So for example, one of the kids noticed how wrinkly the elephant is, and they were asking, well, why? I said, I don't know, what do you tell me? A couple of kids thought, oh, maybe the elephant's old. Another one said, well, could it help it with handling the heat or something like that? And I had never thought about this, but it is absolutely right. So what I've noticed is that I don't have to be the expert. Now, what my job is to tamp down the impulse to either correct or affirm them and just say, okay, good question. Write that down.
After the break, we'll dig in on all the little details you need to make sketching work in your classes. And we'll talk about how to keep kids engaged over the long run, even if they're not into art, like young Salim. Be right back.
Are you ready to power up your Edutopia experience? Our new homeroom feed is here, and if you've already created a free account, you can check it out now at edutopia.org. This is our most personalized offering ever. It's designed to bring you stories, videos, and conversations that match your interests. And we may throw in the occasional event invite or other resources that we think you'll find useful. Log in or create your free account at edutopia.org to access it.
Okay, Salim, let's break down the nuts and bolts of how this works in class. I know you have students sketch the growth of a plant over many months. Once a week, your students spend 20 minutes observing and drawing and annotating, documenting in detail how the plant is changing over time. And they make a flip book with all of their sketches at the end. It sounds really cool. As a former ELA teacher, I could imagine adapting this for a poetry lesson, a creative writing exercise, but I do have some logistical questions, like, how do you find extra time for sketching in class?
Time is always of the essence, figuring out how to fit this in. So in the ideal, there's opportunities in the day for quick sketches that you can do in a couple of minutes. It doesn't have to be beautiful, intricate art, you know, checking out an avocado plant growing. This took maybe 5 minutes, but then there's opportunities for much more detailed sketching, like what I do during my lab periods when I have a double period. That's when they spend 20 minutes actually sketching and observing.
And which plants work well for this? Do you recommend plants like radishes, which are very fast growing, versus, say, an aloe plant that's very, very slow growing?
For a couple of reasons, I recommend plants that we have consumed, ends of the carrot or the celery. It's inexpensive. Kids can bring things in.
So just to clarify, the kids are bringing in food scraps, and from those scraps, you're growing another plant. So it's like the end of the celery you can put in water, and then you can grow another celery.
Exactly right. Yep.
That's great. And so how often should students be sketching?
Once a week keeps the complaining to a minimum. But it also gives them the practice of, so that you can see progress and improvement. That's for like sort of the deeper sketching where I ask them for 20 minutes. Now, building that capacity, like 20 minutes doesn't sound like a long time for adults, but for them, it's a lot of work. Like in the beginning, if I get 5 concentrated minutes out of them, I'm going to call that a win.
Okay, let's talk materials and process. Where is the sketching of this plant growth happening?
I give them a composition book and I give them a pencil, and the pencil stays inside of the book. Those stay in my room. And the algorithmic part is in the upper left-hand corner, you will write the date, the observation number that we're doing. This is observation number 20, and it is January 15th. And then we will write the title of what we're observing. Then everything else is their observations. I have them sketch on the right side of the page, and then on the left side is where their observations are. I want to give equal time for both, because the drawing makes you notice, it gives you the aha moments, but it's the writing that takes that and crystallizes it into something that's conscious and shareable. The writing is how you express what you've noticed.
So two things jumped out at me right there. One is how accessible this strategy is. You're not saying that fancy art supplies are needed. It's a composition notebook and a pencil. The second thing is that there's a uniform heading for every single sketch. I love that.
It also helps me when it comes to grading. If observation number 20 was blank, oh, okay, they weren't there that week.
Now, I know you ask students not to talk while sketching to keep them focused on the task, but I'm curious, what guidance do you offer students to help them understand how to sketch when they're just getting started?
It's fundamentally 3 or 4 things. Hold the pencil really, really lightly, high up at the end of the pencil, so that you can lightly sketch. It's very forgiving if you lightly sketch.
When you say high up, do you mean closer to the graphite end or the eraser?
Closer to the eraser.
Ah, the eraser. Got it.
Yes. Then when you look at something, I want you to look at it in terms of its geometries. So when we look at an elephant, you think about the elephant's body. Some people might say it's a giant rectangle. Some might say it's an oval. Whatever the geometry that you see, that's all you're trying to do, is you're trying to capture that. Once you have those in place, then you can start worrying about capturing the details. And then to actually then sketch, what you need to do is spend most of your time looking at the image and not at what you're drawing.
So I'm hearing 3 tips for beginner sketchers. The first is hold the pencil lightly closer to the eraser end. The second tip is to start with the basic shapes of whatever you're drawing and then go back and add more details. And finally, spend more time looking at the object you're observing than your sketch.
Exactly right.
We hear from teachers that kids often resist drawing, especially students who aren't interested in art or feel like they aren't good at it. How do you address that?
I've had kids who they don't draw well, but I know that this is the most accurate that they can create at the moment, and they do well on it. And they see that I'm not penalizing what they perceive to be an inadequacy.
It's not an art assessment.
It's not an art assessment. And so once that fear of judgment gets reduced, I see kids are more willing to engage. The kids who are already good artists do struggle with this because they've already developed their own style and they want to continue to do their own style. And I do have to say, look, I'm not looking to create a stylized version of reality. I'm looking to create reality. That requires patience and focus on what is in front of you.
Okay. And I know that you do grade these notebooks. Can you talk to me about what your rubric looks like as you're assessing the sketches?
C-A-N-E, cane, four things. C is complete, A is accurate, N is neat. And that's 90%. If you have those three things, you've got 90%. And then there's this sort of holistic, ephemeral quality of excellence, and E is excellent. If I can see that a student has done all of the parts, has captured them as accurately as they can with great intention, had some evidence of like real engagement, then that's a 10 out of 10.
Now, Salim, as we start to wrap up, I'd like to get your take on a few similar sketching strategies that other teachers in our community told us they use with younger students and in subjects other than science, like sketching vocab words or math terms. One first grade teacher named Ruth requires her kids to draw when they're trying to solve math problems to help them make sense of the questions. And Mary has her fifth grade science students draw important concepts to help them retain that information. What do you think about these kinds of strategies?
I think that that makes a lot of sense. Visual representations of the numbers makes a lot of the computation become incredibly easy. So props. I wish I was in your first grade class.
Okay, and here's another strategy from our community. We heard from a high school English teacher named Tanner Jones, who does a nature writing activity with his students. Tanner says that at first, many students offer broad observations like, the leaf is yellow, but like you, he pushes his students to spend more time observing over the course of 45 minutes. He says that when they run out of obvious things to say, their observations become more nuanced and detailed. I know this is writing, not drawing, but what do you think?
That is beautiful, but I'd also recommend drawing from imagination, drawing a scene. If a scene is really, really well written, you can visualize it in your head. And if that scene sticks out to you, recreate it in some way. The more we can visualize and then crystallize our visualization so that other people can get it, the more value we get out of the experience and the more value we can give.
Right. And if students are drawing a scene in detail, that's not only going to help them remember that part of the story, but they're also learning about the value of sensory detail and well-rendered settings and creative writing. So what I'm hearing from you is that there are creative ways to incorporate sketching and observing into pretty much almost any subject.
Yes, and at every age. The five-year-old that says the frog is green because he lives in the forest is accurately capturing reality. The 13-year-old that says that the frog is green because it's camouflaged to avoid predators is having an accurate scientific experience. The AP bio student that is discussing natural selection and evolutionary niches is also engaged in a scientific discovery, and they're all engaging in scientific truth at an appropriate level of rigor. Science is the process of observing reality as objectively as we can and conveying what we have observed as clearly as we can. If you do those two things, you are engaged in a scientific process.
Here are three things I'm taking away from this conversation. One, if you want to bring sketching into your class, you may get some pushback from kids. Start small. Try it for 5 minutes at first. Ask kids to annotate their drawings to ground the activity in more familiar practices and slowly work up to longer sketching periods. Two, if you do grade your students' sketching activities, make sure you're clear that artistic ability is not a factor. This strategy isn't just for kids who already like art. It's for everybody. Salim's grading criteria is a helpful reminder that drawing goals don't need to be artistic. He grades for completeness, accuracy, neatness, and overall excellence. Andy says that approach helps kids who don't yet see themselves as artists overcome any intimidation they may feel about drawing. And three, this strategy is not just for science. Kids can sketch and annotate scenes from novels, poems, historical documents, even math problems. This tactic is a powerful learning tool that harnesses multiple sensory systems, and it can dramatically improve recall and boost comprehension. There's a lot of great research backing up the impact of drawing to learn. We'll link to some of the best studies and our coverage of it in our show notes. Special thanks to Salim Talili. He's a high school biology and chemistry teacher in New York City. And he's also the author of a new book coming out in January 2026. It's called Sketching for Science. You can learn more about the book and a related film at Salim's website, sketchingforscience.com. Salim also wrote several articles about his sketching strategy for Edutopia. Check out our show notes for the links to those and to all the research we mentioned in this conversation. We love hearing from you. Send us your stories, ideas, and questions. Our email is podcasts@edutopia.org. And if you liked this episode, follow us on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts. And please leave us a rating and review. That helps others find our show. This episode was produced by Anne Noisani and edited by me. Our engineer is Doug Keeley, and our supervising editors are Sarah Gonser and Steve Merrill. Special thanks to our research editor, Yuki Terada. By the way, this was Yuki's debut on our show, and we hope he'll be back again soon. I'm Kristen Leong. We'll see you again soon.